There is a sixth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the sunlight of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area that might be called the Twilight Zone.
Today marks the 50th anniversary of the first broadcast of an episode of Rod Serling's television series, The Twilight Zone. It may not have seemed like an auspicious occasion at the time, but as it turns out, the modest show has greatly influenced American popular culture. To celebrate, tonight at 7:30 to 11 at the Time Center, there'll be screenings of Where Is Everybody, the pilot episode, and Eye of the Beholder, an episode that's now considered to be one of its classics. Arlen Shumer, an illustrator, author, and Twilight Zone expert, is hosting the screening, and he joins us again today. He also with us is George Clayton Johnson, who created several scripts for the series, and he also wrote for Star Trek and is the co-author of the novel Logan's Run. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me, Leonard.
Are you there, George?
Yes, I am.
Hi, George.
Hi, how are you, Arlen? Good to hear from you again.
Absolutely.
Well, Arlen, how old were you when The Twilight Zone went on the air?
I was born in 58. The Twilight Zone debuted in 59, but the first images I can recall seeing as a child was when I was 5 years old, 1963, and that hanging eyeball in outer space opening debuted, and that must have burned its way onto my retinas and through my brain. And maybe it helped me become an artist, for all I know.
Because you've done work of this sort since. Was the pilot the first show?
Yes.
The pilot that you're showing?
The pilot episode tonight, I'm showing at 10 o'clock, the exact 50th anniversary of when it debuted, October 2nd on a Friday night, 1959. And what are the odds of that? That's a little Twilight Zone coincidence right there.
How big was the first show's audience?
You know, the Twilight Zone, kind of like Star Trek, was never a big ratings success. It had a revolving door of sponsors, but it was a big critical success. And just like Star Trek, the last year it had to come back because fans wrote in, and the Twilight Zone was the same way.
And George, you wrote for Twilight Zone. How soon after it went on the air did you write your first episode?
I was sitting on the floor in my newly purchased little G.I. Bill home with Charles Beaumont and Richard Matheson and William F. Nolan on the first day of 1960, January 1, the night before had been New Year's Eve, and The Four of Us Are Dying, adapted from one of my short stories by Rod Serling, was on the air, and that was my first television credit, in fact, my first writing credit, and I doubt that I would have had a writing career if it had not been for Rod Serling's show being there and my interest in it.
So that was very early in the run because it went on the air in 59. You're talking about early 60.
October, November, December, January, and so it's like 3-4 months after the show was on the air, one of my stories appeared.
Now, did they just adapt your story, or did Rod call you and say, we'd like you to write something for us?
No, I submitted a story through an agent, and Rod bought the story to adapt himself. But he got overloaded, and, I mean, then he did, and then he did that again, and he even wanted more stories. But I said to him, or I said to his producer, Buck Houghton, and I was being foolish at the time, but I was trying to find some way to break in. I said, I know you like the story, but I won't sell you the story unless I can get an opportunity to write a first draft teleplay of it because I believe I can do it. And for 2 weeks, they let me sweat. And I thought, oh, my God, I've really blown it. I had an opportunity here. I'm collaborating with the best-known writer in America. And I'm being snotty. But they finally called back, offered me an opportunity to write a first draft, and paid me an additional $750 to do so. And I wrote A Penny for Your Thoughts.
With Dick York, the first
With Dick York, yes.
Bewitched husband.
Was this? He was the husband in Bewitched.
Bewitched, right? Elizabeth Montgomery.
This show was. Were there other shows like this where each week you didn't have continuing actors? It wasn't a real series.
There used to be in the '50s. There was anthology live television.
So this was an anthology show.
It was the last remaining one, and then pretty much after Twilight Zone, there's never been anything like it since.
There have been Hitchcock Presents, a number of other things. And was it thought of, George, as writing the equivalent of a short movie?
Oh, no. See, one thing we got to understand about Rod is he was essentially a playwright. Television came along and sort of invented Rod Serling. Up until then, Rod was writing what are essentially plays,
yes.
And then he would have found himself adapting his thinking to write plays for a camera to see, you know. But that was like a whole different world. There was no film to TV the way we know it. There was Gene Autry movies and things like that. And so now what they called live TV stopped. All of those artists, writers that worked for that medium, gravitated to the West Coast, where they started doing what we now know of as episodic TV, of which there were just tons and tons of shows came out, but they were a brand new phenomenon. Right now, Rod would be working for the Internet. He'd probably be designing a show for the cell phone.
Well, it's an anthology series. What ties it all together is a certain sense of surrealism.
Absolutely. And George.
Yeah, but also to define it a little better, Rod's specialty, the thing he was great at, Requiem for Heavyweight Patterns, was the realistic drama where everything is absolutely realism. That was his métier. Now, to add that touch of the imaginary was the big invention of The Twilight Zone, was to add one little element of the imaginary to what is basically hard-boiled plays. And the idea of Rod Serling dictating one-act plays wasn't so ridiculous when you stop to think that up until then he had been writing these three-act plays, right, which are exceedingly difficult to put together and to do a good one. So Rod was sort of inventing television as television was inventing him.
Well, Arlen, a listener, wants to know about another show called One Step Beyond. Which one came first?
One Step Beyond, I believe, slightly preceded The Twilight Zone by maybe a year.
And they had similar concepts, didn't
they? In the sense of, you know, all the other shows that were like Twilight Zone, like Alfred Hitchcock Presents, One Step Beyond, The Outer Limits, which came after, they're all, to me, aspects of The Twilight Zone. They're more science fiction-y, they're more horror, they're more one way or the other, whereas The Twilight Zone was a little bit of everything. Which makes it hard to describe, but also why it's great. The best of all of them.
It wasn't supernatural,
right,
in that sense. It wasn't religious in that sense. You know, it was more spiritual in that sense. It was, when you try to define what made a good Twilight Zone, God, the number of discussions and arguments we had about that. You know, what is this Twilight Zone? Where is its limits? You guys are being cartographers and geometers here, and you're trying to define that territory. Just what exactly is that territory? You know that.
Well, Leonard mentioned it before, and George, you and I, when we've met at various conventions and things, have discussed the fact that people at first labeled The Twilight Zone as a sci-fi show or as a horror show or as a fantasy show. It had elements of all those, but it was really surrealism on television.
Yes, it
was looking at the world with new eyes, with fresh eyes, and experiencing it in a different way, which is what the surrealists wanted people to do.
And how well do you think the title, The Twilight Zone, served all of that?
Well,
I was mystified by the title. I'd only heard it with reference to the belt around planet Mercury, where one side of it is totally black all of the time, one side of it is white on, you know, sunlit, and that area around the rim of it was known as a Twilight Zone.
Yeah, but according,
and so I knew what its meaning was.
But according to Serling, George, I thought, because he was a paratrooper in the Pacific during World War II, didn't airplane pilots describe the Twilight Zone as that when they're coming into the aircraft carrier, there's that point where they don't know where the horizon, there's somewhere between what they think is land and air. And I think Serling in some interview somewhere, made a mention. He thought he had made it up, or he had heard that it was an Air Force term.
We have a clip from the pilot episode, Where Is Everybody?, where an Air Force captain explains to a training astronaut the obstacles they have to resolve before they can send him to the moon. And
right.
Let's listen to a little bit of that.
What was it like, Ferris? What did you think you were?
A place I don't want to go again, sir. A town. A town without people, without anybody. What was the matter with me, Doc? Just off my rocker, huh?
Just a kind of a nightmare that your mind manufactured for you. You see, we can feed the stomach with concentrates. We can supply microfilm for reading, recreation, even movies of a sort. We can pump oxygen in and waste material out. But there's one thing we can't simulate. That's a very basic need. Man's hunger for companionship. The barrier of loneliness. That's one thing we haven't licked yet.
That kind of sets the tone for the show, doesn't it?
It also certainly does.
It also Absolutely. Sounds a lot like radio, and Rod Serling started in radio.
Started in radio. He was at that transition, the perfect place at the perfect time, the transition between radio into television in the very early 50s, and he was, like George said, a radio writer, and then was called a television playwright, which was a new term in the 1950s. Reginald Rose, Paddy Chayefsky.
Now, Arlen, 10 days before the show first aired, Mike Wallace told Rod Serling, "Now that you're doing The Twilight Zone, does that mean you won't be writing anything important for television?" I guess that was
the ultimate backhanded compliment.
Yeah, snobbery of the time, especially at CBS, which
yes.
called itself the Tiffany Network.
Well, actually, it became the Tiffany Network after shows like The Twilight Zone won it a bunch of Emmys. And the reason why is because, like you touched on before, George, when all the writers went to, like, Chayefsky and Reginald Rose, they thought staying in television and film series was slumming, stepping down. They went to films. Serling was the only one of those television playwrights to stay in television. And so, therefore, Wallace, who represented the kind of middle-brow sensibility, was putting Serling down by saying, well, now that you're going to be doing a half-hour film series, not like these 90-minute live teleplays where you can explore these more serious themes, they thought it was going to be like a Captain Video sci-fi show. Well, he proved them all wrong.
A listener wants to know about the first Twilight Zone episode that was never aired, starring George Takei, later of Star Trek fame, who was a samurai.
It was an episode from the last season, 63-64, that had to do with Takei kind of having hallucinogenic memories of being a samurai warrior in modern time, facing off against an American veteran. And the reason why that it was kept off the air that I could glean was that they thought the racial stereotypes were too severe. But it was included in the recent DVD package.
Were there other shows that were censored?
I think there was one other episode because I think there were talks of whether the script, something about bells, I forget what the episode title was. There was talk that maybe the script had been not original or plagiarized. But again, both of those episodes are in the syndication packages. DVD packages.
On a personal level, I wrote a story called Sea Change about a man who gets his hand cut off in a tragic accident, but he regrows the hand. But what he doesn't know is that the hand is regrowing a man, and there isn't room for both of them according to the plan. And Rod loved this story, wanted to do it. But he came back to me and said, General Mills came to me and said, we can't do that. Cutting a man's hand off over the dinner table is not our way of trying to sell groceries, you know. And so we can't do it. And Rod, who was a great foe of censorship, understood the business realities there very well and said to me, since they won't let me do it, George, would you like to buy it back? Because I have no damn use for it if I can't use it on the program. So I said, sure. And I went out and borrowed money and bought the thing back. Right now I'm using it as one of the shows on my program, which I call A Touch of Strange. And I'd like to talk for just a moment about what you brought up, Arlen. The idea that surrealism, by adding a touch of the imaginary, tries to enlarge reality. You know, in a sense, it's like you talk about a submarine, eventually somebody will build one. Right now, we've got that beam us up, Scotty, the transporter. Somebody will dream up a way to do that, because if you can think about it and it makes any kind of logical sense at all, then I can imagine phone booths where you step into a phone booth, dial Chicago, and you're there, you know?
Yep.
So the idea of enlarging reality, working on the frontiers of reality and trying to enlarge it, is completely enlarge it to the point where no longer is anything a fantasy anymore. We have found ways to overcome that. I can imagine a crazy guy. Well, I'll get into a story here, and this is a short interview, but I have ways of illustrating what I'm trying to talk about.
Okay, well, but we can't do it right now, unfortunately. You know, we're pretty much out of time. But I just one more thing, because I'm sure both of you have thought a lot about this. And Twilight Zone has been repeated now on cable. What kind of impact do you think it had on the popular culture that followed? I know it had a real impact on some actors because they got their starts on the show.
Robert Redford, Robert Zvalitza, who's who of Hollywood of that era. Both television stars as well as movie stars, Charles Bronson, James Coburn, Burt Reynolds. It really is like a who's who of that kind of male generation. Lee Marvin. The list goes on and on.
And just like the student rebellions or the Beat Generation or the Flower Children or all of those things allowed us to start to sink in other categories. We were so buttoned down in the Nixon years and the Eisenhower years,
right,
that nobody believed in anything. And so that now along could come someone who was saying, well, what about telepathy? What about teleportation? What about time travel? What about all other kinds of categories to think in that science fiction people were very aware of, but your ordinary mundane real people out there, they didn't have a clue to any of that. So for them, One Step Beyond, which was less excellent. I knew John Newland, who was the host of it, but it was much, much less excellent than what Rod was doing. Rod was welding literature and the ideas of people like Ray Bradbury and Charles Beaumont and Richard Matheson and Earl Hamner and all kinds of people who
wanted to talk
about something different, and that Rod Serling show gave everybody a whole new slant on things.
You know, George, I quote you in my, I just wrote an essay for the PaleyCenter.org, which used to be the Museum of Television, and now it's sort of my ultimate Twilight Zone essay, but I quote you, George, when you say the Twilight Zone played just as much a part in the Renaissance transformation of the 1960s as bright-colored clothing, rock music, and marijuana did. It helped to jack people up to a higher level, and I agree with you 100%.
And I want to thank the two of you so much for being with us. Arlen Shumer is an illustrator, author, and Twilight Zone expert, and George Clayton Johnson wrote several scripts for and created several stories for the series.
One of the greats.
Wrote for Star Trek, and I'm sure
the very first episode
that came because of Twilight Zone, and is co-author of the novel Logan's Run. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.